Last week, I introduced you to Ebenezer Scrooge and shared with you a visit he received from his former business partner, Marley. I encouraged you, when considering your life in this world, not to compare yourselves to Scrooge, who was, by all accounts, horrible and hated Christmas, but to compare yourself to Marley. Marley, whose spirit was doomed to walk this earth after death because it never went out in his lifetime. Marley's sin, if you will, was not being horrible and unfeeling and bitter and selfish. Marley's failing was that he did not look for opportunities to do good. He did not look beyond himself to where people are hungry, lonely, poor in spirit, in need of a kind word. We handed out bells and encouraged you to think about Marley's example and let your spirit go out whenever you heard the bell ring. During this Advent series, we're taking a look at how living in God's economy, God's world of grace and justice, is the opposite of the life-threatening addiction to money, success, exclusion, and looking out only for ourselves that many of us fall into, at least sometimes. The chimes of the clock tower bells in Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol provide a wake-up call for Ebenezer Scrooge, and they turn him from resentment and fear and isolation into someone who acts from love. Just as God's presence was born anew at Christmas time, we too can be born anew, woken up. Don't tell the governor of Florida I said that. Woken up into renewed life, joy, passion, generosity, humility, and love. Today, on the second Sunday of Advent, we turn our attention to Scrooge's visit from the ghost of Christmas past. And as I did last week, I want to share some words from the book. "Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?" asked Scrooge. "I am." The voice was soft, gentle, singularly low, as if instead of being so close to him, it were at a distance. "Who and what are you?" demanded Scrooge. "I am the ghost of Christmas past." "Long past?" inquired Scrooge. "No, your past." It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him the appearance of having receded from the view. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength. It wore a tunic of the purest white, and round its waist was bound a lustrous belt, the sheen of which was beautiful. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head, there sprung a bright, clear jet of light by which all this was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of its using, in its duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it now held under its arm. Even this, though, when Scrooge looked at it with increasing steadiness, was not its strangest quality, for the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctness, being now a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now a head without a body. Perhaps Scrooge could not have told anybody why if anybody could have asked him, but he had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap and begged him to be covered. "What," exclaimed the ghost, "would you so soon put out with holy worldly hands the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and force me through whole trains of years to wear it, oh, upon my brow?" Where do we even start with this ghostly apparition? I searched and searched for a picture of the ghost of Christmas past that I thought did Dickens' description justice, and there's enough here in what I finally found to fill a whole sermon just with that ghost. But let's just hit a few high points. First, its appearance was a strange amalgamation of old and young, and it both looked and sounded as if it were at a distance rather than right beside Scrooge. And it appeared to have sometimes one leg and sometimes 20 and a head and then no head and its arms. And Dickens took great care to describe the arms. The arms were very long and muscular. The hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength. What an apt description, Annie pointed out as we discussed the book on Wednesday night, because the past often exerts a strong hold on us, often stronger than is good for us. The strangest thing about it, Dickens said, and I definitely would have argued this point, but the strangest thing Dickens said was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light by which all was made visible. And this will come as no surprise if you have any understanding of symbolism. Scrooge wanted it to put its cap on, to cover the light. Scrooge, we know, could not have been eager to have any aspect of his life brought to light. The ghost takes Scrooge on a tour of his past life and begins with the boarding school he was sent to as a young boy. It's Christmas time, and dozens of young boys are playing and calling to one another, and then all seem to have gone home for Christmas, but not Ebenezer Scrooge. He was left there alone, a solitary boy, alone with his books. One of the most important scenes for me in this whole story is this one. As the present Scrooge looks upon the scene, he immediately begins to cry. This hardened old covetous sinner, who has returned every invitation to be kind to the poor and the lonely with the most callous of replies, starts to cry, to sob for his young self. Why does he start to cry? I believe he grieves for the boy that he was, for the lonely, excluded boy who was left all alone during the Christmas holiday. And I have several things to say about that. First, I want to acknowledge that many of us have pasts that are full of things that will make us cry. And I want to encourage you to befriend that child, to love them, to hold them for all the times they hurt, for the times they were bullied, teased, left out, expected to act like an adult, for the times that child learned too much about the world too soon. And if you need help in doing that, seek out someone trusted to help you. Maybe a pastor, a deacon. In many cases, more than that, a professional. The first sign we see of humanity in Scrooge is the tears that he shed for his young self, for his own young self. There is something to that. And then we see Scrooge visited by his younger sister, who clearly adores him, and we see him celebrating Christmas Eve at his workplace with his boss, Fezziwig, who seems to be a combination of father, favorite uncle, Santa Claus, all rolled into one. And we see his one-time fiancée, Belle. Through it all, the ghost continues to remind Scrooge that the past is indelible, that he cannot influence the people, he cannot change the past. And that is, of course, true. But here is what I believe to be important for us, for all of us. Sitting here with our different pasts, our different present experiences, our future still unknown, here's what's important, I think, for us. Almost immediately, Scrooge's remembrance of his past influences him in his present. When Scrooge sees the young boys, "Poor boy," he cries. "I wish," he says, putting his hand in his pocket and looking about him after drying his eyes with his cuff, "but it's too late now." What's the matter?" asks the spirit. "Nothing," said Scrooge, "nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all." Seeing that young boy in his past motivates him to think about how he is acting in his presence. And then later, he feels the spirit's glance. "What's the matter?" asked the ghost. "Nothing particular," said Scrooge. "Something," the ghost insisted. "No," said Scrooge. "I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now." After he goes to the past and sees how he was treated by his boss, he wishes that he had responded to his own employee differently. Going to the past and having it impact him in the present. A good portion of our Advent series is drawn from the book, The Redemption of Scrooge by Matt Rawl. And Rawl emphasizes that our Christian faith never asks us to forget the past. In fact, our Christian faith is rooted in memory. But for us Christians, you know, that's how the bells do. Right? They ring at the most unexpected time. Now, I hope that all of you have been sufficiently conditioned to immediately start thinking about ways your spirit should go out into the world and do good things. In his book, Rawl emphasizes that our Christian faith never asks us to forget the past. In fact, our Christian faith is rooted in memory. But for Christians, Rawl encourages us to believe our hope for humanity can transform our personal sadness into conviction and action on behalf of others. Will we give into the past? Rawl asks us, will we give up on the present? Will we choose to sit and look back at the candle of our life that got snuffed out by someone or something and took away our hope and our power and our agency? Or will we light it again under our own power, reignited by God's love? Our faith teaches us about looking back and then forward in hope. Every single time we share communion together, for example, we remember that God's love was revealed not through perfect wholeness, but through a broken body. Christ was raised not in order to spare us grief, but so that our faults would not define us, so that our sadness would not be the end of the story. People, believe the good news, even when the past is trying to exert its stronghold over you. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. For a child has been born for us, a child given to us. Authority rests upon their shoulders. Amen.